Welcome to the Fantasy Golf Degenerates Podcast. Jordan Bell, third. Jordan Bell, third. Yo, yo.
Jordan Bell third, stacking penny stocks while I'm flipping these birds. Sipping on Ciroc, trip them up with the words. I done popped the molly and I think this be my third. Jordan Bell third, Jordan Bell third. I've been getting dirty money, Jordan Bell third. Jordan Bell third, I've been getting dirty money, Jordan Bell third. Stacking penny stocks while I'm flipping these birds.
What is going on, DGen Nation? Ken and Kim here, bringing you another Fantasy Golf Degenerates podcast this week for the Arnold Palmer Invitational from Bay Hill. As usual, I'm here with everybody's favorite Canadian, Tyler Tambly. And Tyler, how you doing?
Man, that was a good intro this week, Kenny. You got it. You know what tournament we're at? That's just perfect, man. I'm doing well. Excited to get into it. Lots to talk about. Killikawa back on the run again, doing his thing. So that hurt me a little bit. We'll get into it as we go through it. But before we get into it, guys, just want to remind you quickly, this podcast is brought to you and sponsored and presented by rotogrinders.com. Head on over to rotogrinders.com/DJ and get yourself $10 off the first month. Check out all the good stuff we got going on over there. But yeah, Kenny, Killikawa, man, this guy, you came through with the secret bet. You didn't bring it to the boys, yeah. But you had the secret bet in the club over there and you got your money. So good for you. And what did you think of the event, man? I thought it was pretty crazy.
Yeah, well, first off, it's super frustrating because last week when I saw the numbers, I saw Morikawa at 55-1 at like 9 a.m., you know? And I was like, what the hell? 55-1 for the number like sixth golfer in the world. Like, what is this book doing? So it was like auto bet. I just bet it, right? But then I started doing research. And of course, you know, it's a brand new course. And I expected different things to come out of the course. As you heard last week, I thought, you know, Bombers would have a little bit more value and stuff like that. And so as the week went on, you know, as the day went on, I decided not to put him on the podcast as one of my bets. And as the week came on, I didn't even add him to my final card. And the thing is, you know, the guy, I had another runner up on the podcast. I had Hovland at 22-1. That was my seventh runner up that I tipped in eight events. Someone called me the Tony Finau of golf betting, and like it hurt my soul. You know what I'm saying? That shit hurt my fucking soul. I mean, I had Neiman at the Tournament of Champions. Neiman, it's Sony, both either all my second places. I had Cantlay. I bet him live, and I posted it on Twitter after round three. I had Xander at Phoenix. I had Maverick 80-1. I posted that on the Gubs Corner Slack after round two. I had Finau at Genesis. I had Hovland at the WGC last week. Just because, and so it's super frustrating. It was good for me because I ended up betting Kyle and I won. But that's just sort of bad that like my first win of the year came without letting anyone know that I was betting him, not even being on my card. So it sort of feels like it's not even a win. You know what I'm saying? But you know, getting back to the event itself, I mean, Morikawa, I mean, Jesus, what a great player. Four wins already in a short career, a major and a WGC before the age of 25. First golfer to do that since Tiger Woods. This guy, I mean, if he just puts average to above average, his iron game it is like the best in the world right now. There's really no doubt about that. You know, you could say what you want about a short game, bringing out that like three wood, you know, all like it's like 1978 or something, you know, around the greens. It was a little weird seeing that. And then you see, and his drives are supremely accurate, not very long, but he's very, very accurate. So, I mean, what an event. I mean, there were times like when he was up by five on Saturday and then, you know, he came back to two and I was like, oh, well, maybe it's not going to happen. And then he came out on Sunday and he had no fear, man. These kids have no fear. And then, of course, you had Hovland, who came out on Friday after a minus two round on Thursday, came out on fire Friday. I think it was like 7-8 under for the day going into the final hole, and you saw what he did with a snowman, a double par. And, you know, you think his week is over, but he comes back on Saturday, comes back on Sunday, great rounds again, and just shows his resilience. I mean, like, you know, most guys after that, I mean, they just fall apart. But this youngster, again, another baller out there. So, you know, you also had some other people, strong showings. Koepka looks like he's on target for the major season here coming up. Scottie Scheffler had some good rounds. Reed played well until about till the last day. Billy Horschel up there. Oostie, Webb. I mean, it was a great event. It was really fun to watch. But I mean, man, Kawa just ran away with it, and it was great. The only problem is, of course, I didn't have him in DraftKings either. But Cash Game Cornerstones came strong. All my golfers inside the top 25, including Hovland, who finished second, Reed, who finished 10th. They're on a little bit of a heater here lately, guys. 15 and 16 make cuts, and yeah, including the no-cut event. In the last four events, 11 top 25, three top threes. So we're getting there. I like my Cascade Cornerstones again this week, so I'm ready. What did you think of the event?
Didn't you hear, Kenny? Cash is trash, man. Nobody plays
cash. I know. Yeah. Someone said that to me on Twitter. Here's the thing. Yeah, everyone, the GBP is the limelight. You know, that's how you that's where you get the limelight. I don't have much of the limelight. You're the limelight guy winning all these GPPs. But, I mean, you know, the way you do your bankroll, if you just GPP heavy and you spend all your money on that, you're going to go through times where you just suck ass and you're just losing money week after week. And I can't lose money like that. I'm not a rich man. I'm not poor, but I'm not a rich man, you know. And so I gotta be able to play every week because, you know, it's sort of my job. And so I use cash as something about 40 to 45% of my bankroll. I use one lineup. And then if it cashes, you know, I'm going to have a winning week. So I think it's super important when it comes to bankroll management. So the guy can say whatever the hell he wants to say. I built my following on cash and it's been strong for me. But I digress. Yeah, so go ahead, Tim. No, what you think of the event?
I loved it, man. I love the courses that are like this. So basically, you know, the Saturday, it was almost like a U.S. Open, right? Where one of the days is hard, one of the days has been easy. We've seen that lately where you kind of get some scoring capabilities, but then they can still come out and perform and put on a good show for everybody. So yeah, the Hovland thing is insane. The eight, first of all, just, you know, I know Cal, I'll get to that in a second, but the Hovland thing is just nuts because, man, he's a Sunday killer. This guy came back out on Sunday after that, smiling the whole way while he does it. He's just like happy as hell out there. Him and Scheffler, both guys that you just see smiling on the course no matter what's going wrong. And I think that's a great attitude to have. Like, that just, you know, goes to show, five under again. You can't mess with this guy on a Sunday, Hovland, that is. Scheffler was right there in the mix. Rory, you know, gave us just enough. So we'll get to that when we get to this week. That's going to come into play. You could see sort of the major type feel, though. It's not, you know, 12 under was nowhere near the top, but Louis Oosthuizen, he only comes out in these types of events, man. So it's another guy we'll talk about for this week. Finau, even on Sunday, rough day there, but the Morikawa thing is just crazy, man. I don't know. That putting grip threw me off a little bit. You know, that's the only reason I really wasn't feeling it. And probably a poor reason when you think about the
stuff. Well, he lost like 275 strokes putting the week before. So no, that was like that was one of the reasons why I was like, new putting grip. He lost 8 billion strokes the week before. Can he really get that much better? He did.
I love when you talked about the wet or the wood that he brought out, because they were like, oh, Paul, is this going to be where he uses some of the stuff you showed him? Because he was working with Paul Azinger and Marco Mira the week before or whatever, getting ready for this. And he goes, this just might be, Paul says. And then next thing you know, he's like, oh, no, he's bringing out a wood. Sorry, Paul. Just crushed him right there on the air. So he thought he was getting his moment of fame too, but it didn't work out. In the end, he did thank both of them though. But I thought the bigger thing was, you know, the Sunday Red, the stuff with Tiger last week, everything there, that was kind of awesome to see, man. Finau was really rocking it the best, I think. I liked Rory's shirt with a couple different, you know, black lines through it and sort of stuff to throw a little bit of a spin on it, but just to be different. But I did think that Finau rocked it the best. And the other side of it was, you know, there was no better way to do it. We had the cut made comparisons with Morikawa and Tiger before, but now both the second guy ever to go with a major and a WGC under the age of 25. I thought that was incredible and no better way. And he did it with just some insane iron play, basically did everything, you know, that Tiger would do down the stretch. So he's a guy to watch out for no matter what. Like you said, all those young guys, him, Hovland, This week it was with Scheffler up there. We've often seen Niemann, who you mentioned a couple of seconds earlier, that you've been on with him, you know, all these other guys. And then of course, Wolf, who's been off and on having a real tough time right now. I don't know if that's the injury or whatnot that's getting to him, but he's always been up there and he's got a couple wins under his belt as well. So I'm excited for the future of golf, man. Makes it all that much better for us doing the content and putting the stuff out there. And then yeah, Brooks, who you mentioned, I guess I can't leave him out. He looks back for sure. Maybe he doesn't have, you know, I got the win at Waste Management. He didn't close it out here, but he made some really nice shots down the stretch and some great putts that could have put him in it, but Cal was just too solid, too strong.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, let's talk about the course. Concession was a great course. I was wrong about how it's going to play, but that's gonna happen when you see something on a brand new course. It played almost like a major type feel, you know, in a fair major, like firm but fair. You know, like if you're on target, you can score, but if you're just a little bit off, you're gonna struggle. That's the way I think golf courses should be. You don't see enough of that on tour. You know, you can miss a little bit here and there and still be able to save yourself, but I mean, you miss a little bit here or there on this course, on concession, you're looking at double, triple, quads in your scorecard. I think it's gonna be perfect for a PGA Championship. Either that or a yearly event. I don't know what they can cancel to bring this one in, but I mean, like, I think we need to see more of this course. I mean, the bunkering, the way the course was laid out, the contours of the greens. It was really, really fun to watch, because like I said, you know, I think somebody shot like 20 over or something like that, you know, or you could shoot like 18 under like Kawa did. You know, it just depends. And that's the why I guess 15 over was the worst score. But you saw, like, I'd say, you know, close to about 30 golfers shoot over par here. And then you see the other 30 or so shoot under par, but a lot from like -1 to -5, -6. It was a fun course. You're hitting the ball well, you're going to do well. You hit the ball crappy, you're going to do shitty. So really want to see this course more and more now that we have an idea of flavor of how it plays. So I really like it. Anything about the course?
Yeah, just final thoughts, I guess. You know, you mentioned I'd love to see more of it. I think it should go on the roster every year or some way, shape, or form to get it out there. Because like I said, it's any course that can bring the world's number one golfer to his knees and Dustin Johnson like it did here. And what's funny is kind of mini correlations, very small sample size of one, but DJ and English were 1-2, if you remember, at the Northern Trust this not too long ago at a, you know, a similar type. What was that? I think 19 under for English and 30 under for DJ, where they're just ripping up a course, not the same course at all like this as far as the difficulty, but just goes to show. And now, you know, both those guys flipped on their head here down at the bottom. Well, sort of the cream rose to the top of the best that had it for all 4 days. And even guys like Hovland, like you said, who bounced back from an 8 versus, I don't know if you saw the English, whatever it was, 8 or 9 to kick things off. But that was just a burial where you thought he had it, you know, in 3. And instead it's an 8 or a 9. I can't remember what it was now, but it was just brutal and just destroyed his week entirely.
Yeah. English seems like he's just chilling the F out after his win. Hot, he's like, man, I got my win. I'm good for a couple of years. I'm good for basically 3 years. You know, having the grind, actually losing his card there for a little bit, having to go through the Corn Ferry to get it back. And then now he got that win. He's like, fuck it. I'm chilling. I'm straight chilling. I'm going to go out here. If I make, you know, it's a no cut event. I'm going to make my money, go out, do my thing. He really hasn't done much since his win. I don't know. The thing about it is this course could fit him. We'll see. I don't know if I'm going to play him, but we'll see how it goes. All right. So let's go to the listener league. Genghis Cohen could be related. One of my brethren here. If you didn't know, a little history fact, I think Genghis Khan, almost 2% of the world's population is related to Genghis Khan. The guy used to just rape and pillage everybody. So his seed just flew back in the day. And so I guess a very large part of the population related to Mr. Genghis. History lesson for you guys right there. So Genghis Cohen starts off with Tony Finau. You know, finishing 14th, 17.2% owned, 91.5 points. Hovland, 124 points. I think if you look at the people who finished second place, he beat Koepka and whoever else, Horschel, by over 20 points in DraftKings. Another thing, Bryson DeChambeau, who was my favorite play last week, might not have had the best finish, finished 23rd. I think he was 7th in DraftKings points. You got to pay attention to that stuff when you're doing DraftKings. Like, you know, looking at it on the outside, me picking Bryson probably wasn't the best. He finished 23rd, but 7th in DraftKings points for a $9,900 golfer, not the worst week possible. Again, but of course I lost in GPPs, cash won, so it was still a winning week in overalls. But again, I'm going off target. So, Finau, Hovland for Genghis Cohen, Morikawa, the winner, 128 points, only 4 points more than Mr. Hovland there. 11.73% owned. Scotty Scheffler, almost 19% on 106.5 points. Kevin Na, 84 points, sneaky 84 points, sneaky 11th place finish. Lanto Griffin, 73 points, 22% owned. Still bitter about Lanto. I had a top 20 bet on him. Of course, he finished 22nd. I think the last two times I bet on Lanto top 20, he finished 21st and 22nd. So that really sucks. What do you think about the lineup there, Tambo?
Yeah, look good. This is sort of the build you had to have. Talked about it on the Wednesday show last week about Roto Grinders, then reviewed it again today. You remember last week, Kenny? It was the first look, and I was saying, what is fading the top crazy? Like, there were so many guys in the 9K range that I loved. And sure enough, he had Finau, Hovland, Morikawa. Most of the winning lineups were with your boy, you just mentioned, were with Bryson, Hovland, Morikawa. And then even if it skipped over Scheffler, you could have guys like Horschel and Ortiz in that 7K range. Ortiz had a great little Sunday, and then finish it out with Kevin Na or Anser or Lanto or whoever you want it to be, and put yourself up here in this range or above based on that Bryson scoring. So nice build overall, you know, sort of skipping the 11Ks, the 10Ks, no 7K guys too. Made it pretty unique. I like that about it. And then the ownership was pretty well dispersed, right? A couple guys in the 20s, 19 and a 17, and then a 6 and an 11. Morikawa, you know, 11% was just a great spot to pick him up, and I completely overlooked it. Took the putting grip too much into play, but shout out to Genghis Cohen. We've got him into the three-man and added him to the league for the Tournament of Champions for the end of year. And then got to give a shout out to Dub KJ in third, a regular. See him around often. He's always doing his thing, so congrats to him. Right there, man, next week maybe, but we'll get back to it again for this week, Kenny.
Yeah, not the worst strategy. Just, you know, looking at the numbers when they first come out in the morning on Monday and just looking for those crazy wild ass numbers, even before you do your research and clicking those, not the worst strategy. It worked for me last week, thank God, because if I had to do just another runner up and not have a winner, I probably would have thrown my remote control at the TV. You know, 7 runner ups in 8 events is just sick. It makes me sick to my stomach. And if anyone calls me the Tony Finau of golf betting again, I will slap them across their motherfucking mouth. But anyways, let's get to this week's course. It's going to be the PGA Tour heads to Orlando, Florida this week for the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill Club and Lodge. A field a bit smaller than most weeks, about 123 golfers, but still top 65 in ties. So once again, in this type of situation, less than half the golfers are going to miss the cut. You can be a bit more aggressive in cash, and you'll see my lineup is a bit aggressive in cash this week. And we'll go over that with my cornerstones later on. The field been a bit weaker after Arnie's death, and the Euros have tended to dominate the winner's circle. Like you can see online, the only two Americans to win here since 2006 were Tiger and Matt Every. Most of this has to do with scheduling. You know, I think years before it was the match play, you know, like the week after, and everyone played the match play because it's a WGC event and it's free money. And the Masters only 3 weeks after this event. So you saw a lot of Americans sit out. But the Euros have tended to come in and use this as their, like, first event of the PGA Tour season, like a springboard to start their season. And we see that once again. You know, the top American players, a lot of them sitting out, still a strong foreign contingent. And again, the scheduling this year still messes with them a little bit, being sandwiched in between last week WGC and this week's the Players. So you're going to see some people sit out like Koepka and JT and DJ. You're seeing all these guys step out, Cantlay, and they have Xander, and they're not playing this week. But Euros, they're strong, and there's a couple of guys up top, the Americans up top. So still not the worst field in the world. The weather is crucial in this event and how the course plays. We've seen winning scores range from minus 4 to minus 18 the last few years or so, and most of that has to do with the wind. Now, you know, there were some major changes to the course in 2009, so looking at course history and trends. I skipped the part. Let me go back here real quick. This could be important. The forecast this week actually calls for, like, rain before, like Tuesday and Wednesday, and then, you know, so it could soften the course a little bit, make good scoring conditions for Thursday and Friday, but then the wind picks up on the weekend with projected 25 mile per hour gusts. Now we're recording this at 7 o'clock on a Monday, so all this can change. But one thing you can do with that type of setup is, you know, it makes the round three showdown, if you're playing showdown, it could be more viable to go with the early guys with playing in less. The wind on Saturday is supposed to be light on in the morning and strong in the afternoon when the leaders tend to go out. So, you know, for showdown plays on Saturday, you can tend to go with those morning guys. Also for live betting purposes, this is pretty important. You know, you can catch guys with very large numbers on Saturday morning, you know, and you can see them just climb up the leaderboard if this weather forecast is correct. And you see light winds Saturday morning building up to very strong winds when the leaders tee off. Because, I mean, you saw what strong winds could do here last year with Hatton winning at -4 and like five golfers shooting under par. So, I mean, that's how hard this course can get if you tend to get the winds up. And that can play to your advantage when you live bet before round three starts. So pay attention to that. You can probably check my Twitter feed or my my Slack on the site that I work for. I'm sure Tambo could do something on Roto Grinders. I mean, something you got to pay attention to for live betting if this forecast is true. All right, so, you know, the course has been through some changes. You know, I'd only look at course history from 2010 on. You know, there was worm infestations on the greens in 2015, so they redid all the putting surfaces. You know, the course is played, once again, just depends on the weather, how easy it plays. The main difference, one huge difference that they've done, you know, they've widened the fairways the farther you go out. So you would expect, you know, so like 325 and out, you're looking at like almost 40-yard average for the width. But the coalesce with that, they actually shaved off a lot of the rough, like around the greens that lead to traps and that lead to water, instead of having that thick rough as like a barrier between the golf ball and the water and the hazard that'll stop the ball from going in. They shaved all those off. So, you know, it creates a lot more trouble around the greens. Now let's get to the meat of the course here. Bay Hill, 7,450 yard ish. Par 72 with 4 par 3s and 4 par 5s. It's a good mixture of holes where bombing it off the tee will sometimes be an advantage, and sometimes placing it in the right spot with a 3-wood or hybrid will be the right play. Still, less than driver course, but the par 5s are reachable in 2 by most if the course is firm. And length off the tee, of course, will be helpful for those holes. In 4 of the last 6 years, the winners have shot double-digit under par on the par 5s, so scoring must come from these holes. Off the tee, golfers will face wide tree-lined fairways with strategically placed bunkers on almost every tee shot, and water in play on nearly half the holes. Like I said earlier, the fairways actually get wider the farther from the tee box the drive goes, but the course has still been around the bottom 20 in driving distance average on tour. So again, you know, many dog legs, water, thick, you know, tall, up to 4-inch rough will make many golfers focus more on accuracy than distance, less than drive. Even though the fairways are above average in width, there are many slopes and undulations, so sometimes a good-looking drive off the tee can still find the thick rough, especially if it is playing firm and fast. On approach shots, golfers will see firm Bermuda grass greens that are elevated on some holes, surrounded by bunkers and thick rough, are average in size with a lot of speed, about 12 to 12.5 on the stimp. They're also going to have plenty of slope and runoff areas, like I spoke about before. And you miss those runoff areas, sometimes you're going to be wet. Water will come into play on wayward approach shots. And if the wind does pick up, watch out for plenty of drives and approaches in the drink. Tambo, what are you looking for in golfers this week, my friend?
Very, very refined model here, Kenny. You talked about it a little bit, but just like you said, so the wider fairways, I think, matters quite a bit. So, you know, a lot of guys are going to be in a spot where they can hit a nice shot from. So it's going to come down to second shot, strokes gained approach. I definitely think avoiding the mistakes. So whether it's bogey avoidance, whatever you want to look at, just to sort of get an idea, it just comes back to the same thing. It's an invitational. You got to sort of the, you know, a little bit smaller field, but you got also a cut line. So you got to remember that you got to have the best of the best in there. If we're going to get that weather, that's going to be a key factor, just because The guys that are going to have to grind it over the weekend again. So when we get to a guy like Louis O, maybe that comes into play again. He's playing really good golf right now, enough to get him through and make the cut, but he could actually really thrive over the weekend. So I think that's just an example of a guy that I'm going to be looking at here. And then just proximity and even a little bit of putting here has been important in the past. So I think that's going to be, you know, sort of it for me. And then it does come into play when you're getting into these tiers and start going through them.
Let's get to the tiers in the 10K range. We got Hatton all the way to Roars. What you doing this week, my friend?
I'm feeling it again, Kenny. I think I might be feeling it too much. I don't know, but I'm really liking just starting with Hovland and just leave. You know, the Rory Bryson thing is going to be talked about by everybody. Obvious reasons. Rory's course history here is phenomenal. The win when he won it, I think he gained like 8 or 10 strokes putting that Sunday. If you remember, it was just incredible. Just went off, really took it to them. And that's what can happen for sure. But, you know, the interesting thing for me looking back, I just brought it up about the approach. If you look over the last 6 months, Bryson and Rory are two of the best tee to green in the entire field. But if you look at their approach, that's sort of one of the things that's been holding them back. Obviously, Bryson's always off the tee. You know, they've had it going a little bit here lately. They've looked like they showed signs. But, man, you can't deny what Hovland just did and has been doing. We were talking about him before last week that, you know, ball striking – the ball striking that he's performed and what he's shown out there on the courses has been incredible, and I don't expect that to go away. So I wouldn't mind starting lineups with Hovland and then going down from there. I also like Hatton, and I don't know if he'll be slept on, but this is a tournament where Matt Every, Tiger Woods, Hatton won it last year. We've had repeat winners. And if you look at the stats for Hatton, I know he didn't show much again there last week, but just getting back into it over the last 50 rounds or last 6 months, whatever you really want to look at, pretty much everything lines up. So I know that on a way to the victory, he was, you know, giving the whole the finger and throwing up the FU signs and whatnot, but he still got the job done, and that's really what matters. So I think that this could be a spot where you go back to Hatton at 10,000 as well. So I like Hovland, Hatton, and then Reed doesn't kill me, but, you know, I like those two a lot more personally.
You know, I'm actually going to start with Rory. He's going to be probably my highest owned in GBPs, and you're right. When you say his iron game hasn't been that strong, that's sort of misleading. The one part of his iron game has been very, very weak, and that's been his wedge play. Not going to hit too many wedges on this course. I mean, it just depends on how he goes about the drive, how he goes off the tee, but you don't see too many wedges on this event. Like, if you let me look at see what the percentage is here. The thing is, the rest of his iron play has been pretty good. I mean, you look at his strokes gained, he still gained 1.8 at Mexico, 1.8 at Phoenix, 2.1 at Farmers. His iron play was great at the Masters, 1.2 at Zozo. So, you know, the missed cut he had, he didn't do that great.
Just to cut in real quick, just to clarify here, like, you're talking about 1.2s and 1.8s. Hatton's out there putting up 8.7s, 4.1s, or sorry, Hovland, 5.4s. Like,
yes, yeah, but he's losing a shit ton with his wedges, and a lot of these courses that he has played has been heavy on the wedge game. You got to look at it like that as well. I mean, he's losing a ton of strokes when he's from 150 and in. And if you look,
I mean, it's one of the best players in the world. I don't think you're gonna go wrong with Rory McIlroy. I'm talking about setting up for similar to last week, where people just automatically assume if you don't have someone from the top last week, people are thinking you're pretty much done. But you could have started with, you know, Bryson or even Hovland and got there last week, depending on how you did it.
Here's the thing: the approach shot distribution of this course from 150 to 200 plus, you hit about four times more approaches from that range than you do 150 and below. So the wedge game, I think, is not going to be that big of a factor for Rory. The rest of his game is pretty solid iron-wise, and that's why I think I like Rory this week. And you know, I could be wrong. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But his long iron game is strong, okay? Top 15 in this field in the last, like, 50-100 rounds or so. And you know, lots of birdies, lots of DK points, tee to green, always solid. So I like Rory. I'm going with that. Hovland, a little worried about what he said about the Florida courses, talking about how he doesn't like Florida courses except concession. And concession doesn't really play like a Florida course. It plays more of like a West Coast Carolina course hybrid, in my opinion. And something to worry about, a missed cut, no finishes inside the top 40. in Florida, except last week. I could be killing myself because I think he's possibly going to be one of the highest owned in the field with a decent price. And Bryson not visually not playing that well, even though he's seventh in DraftKings scoring last week. And Rory, again, you talk about the iron play. I think a lot of people are going to be thinking about that as well on a second shot course. It makes sense, but unless you look at it a little bit deeper. So I think Hovland could be one of the highest owned in this 10K range. And him talking about how he just doesn't like these type of courses, I think it's possible. I think, for me, it's worth the fade, especially going Rory instead of Hovland. It's not like I'm dropping down in talent level to go with somebody else. So I'm a little worried about Hovland. I mean, you could be right. He can go out and win this thing. The guy is that good.
Yeah, I think ownership-wise, you got it wrong too, though, because like Rory's going to be owned. Hovland may be high owned as well, but like
you think Rory's going to be higher owned than Hovland?
No, saying it's not like he's going to be 10% less though. It's not like you're getting a 25% Hovland and a 10% Rory or something here.
I don't know. I think you get like 23-14, 23-16, 7%. That's decent, especially when the talent level's that similar. I mean, Rory's Rory. Talent level is that similar. Like I said, you're not dropping off. And then, of course, you got Hovland, who says he doesn't like Florida courses.
We'll see what people do. Ownership matters. I just think it comes down to what you actually think it is. Like, that's what I'm saying. Rory's the best course history in the world. I bet Rory this week. I bet Rory. We'll get to that later because that number just made no sense with the field getting a little bit weaker. And then I thought about applying that towards DFS because if you got the weaker field, you'd think let's go ahead with it. But that's what I feel like everybody's thinking. And that's why I was trying to sort of drop down and go to the same strategy as last week. But if you think that, well, we'll have to wait and see how the week shakes out. Obviously, you and I are both going to be keeping an eye on the ownership trends and things like that as things go on. I just think that, I definitely think more people. And then what about Bryson? Did you have any take on him? Because I think a lot of people are thinking here, like I already saw today, people drawing up him trying to put it over the water on the par five and have a putt for Albatross. But I don't know about all that. And I especially don't think early stages.
I think he'll probably be one of the lowest owned. I think Bryson might be one of the lowest owned. Sandwiched between Rory and Hovland.
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible that he's like 12%, 11%, and he could be good for a contrarian play. We'll see how that goes. But I'm playing Rory, and I think Rory is the one I'm going to play. You have me thinking about Bryson, but my first cash game cornerstone is Tyrrell Hatton at $10,000. Iron play strong, really good with his longer irons. You're hitting a ton, like all four of the par threes are over 200 yards, and you got four long par fours where you're going to be hitting your approach from over 200 yards. You're looking around, if you miss a fairway on a couple of those par fives, you're looking around a third of your shots coming from over 200 yards. That's a pretty strong amount. And Hatton's one of the best with his longer irons, really good on par fours as well. Hatton, of course, again, like you said, you talked about it. We've seen repeat winners here. And I have no doubt that he could do that again. So Hatton's going to be my first cash game cornerstone. I'm going to move on to this 9K range because my next cash game cornerstone is right underneath Matthew Fitzpatrick at $9,800. Been in contention going into the weekend. The last few times he's been out there, putting really good. His iron play has been been a little bit better. One of the best in longer par threes. You're going to have to do well. You can lose a lot of strokes on those long par threes, and he's pretty good at it. And he's one of the best on par four scoring in this field. Now, one stat that I looked at over the years. Let me bring this up here. When it comes to par four scoring, you're looking at like about 75% of the golfers that finished top three here were inside the top 70 in par four scoring for the specific year they won. Par five scoring is going to be important. You got to get your scoring done here. But the numbers and the trends tend to show that par four scoring might be just a little bit more important when it comes to this course because you have to, battle it out on those par fours so you can score on those par fives. So I like Fitzpatrick, my second cash game cornerstone pick this week. Other guys I do like in this 9K range, I like Sung Jae. The guy is like one of the best in Florida out there. I think I saw some stat where he's gained like over a stroke more than the rest of the field total in Florida rounds compared to everybody else. I like Sung Jae again, another good guy who's good from 200 plus and really good on longer par threes. Other guys that do like Paul Casey, he's just been playing good golf down here at 9,100. I like that price, which is weird, 9,100 for Casey, but the guy's been playing really, really well. So I like Paul Casey at 9,100. Who do you like in this range?
All the same guys, actually. It's insane. But yeah, Fitz, everyone in the world's on Fitz. So I think that's something. I wonder what Hatton's ownership will actually look like, because that's the fact. Like, you've got Hovland up above at 10-6, and then you've got Fitzpatrick, who everybody's talking about. So have to see about differentiating there. I'm with you on him, especially if he's going to come in much lower owned than Fitz. I still like that. You know, pretty much all the stats line up. We were just chatting before we got on here to record about missing out on the Honda this year, and getting to watch that live last year was just incredible, right? And the stuff that he did down the stretch and the shots that he had to make, you know, 16, 70, all those shots that he made down the stretch while you're yelling foreign things in Korean at him, I thought was just incredible, and really going to miss that this year, Kenny, but definitely going to play him. I'll go back to Decky. Sneaky last week. If this week is going to be not the same as the course, like you mentioned, it's not really the same to the point you made with Hovland there, but at the same time, just sort of getting in the mix of things, still 9,400, a fair price. I like him a little bit more than Spieth, Day, some of those guys. I like Casey down below. I was going to get your take though on Fleetwood, because he's another guy, and I'm giving away all the bets early, but that I did bet Fleetwood right away, reading some stuff, seeing some things, agreeing with them. But I wonder what his ownership is going to be and what it's going to look like here, because I actually do like Casey, and I definitely like a lot of the guys in the 8K range underneath him a lot more. So that's what I was going to see where you were at with him.
I mean, he didn't really show too much last week. I'm not really sure what his ownership could be, but I don't think it's going to be super large. I mean, it could make for a good GPP play. We'll see how he actually plays, though, and I don't know about betting him. I did see that number was like 45-1, 50-1, something like that for Fleetwood in the morning, and you know, he just doesn't win. But, you know, Finau doesn't win, and I bet him, you know, before. So, well, I don't know about Fleetwood. We'll have to see as the week goes on. If he's like 7-8% projected owned, he might be a play. Let me go down to this 9K range. I'll go with my third cash game cornerstone. You can see I'm going pretty high up here. My last cash game cornerstone is in the 6K range. But, you know, like I said, you could tend to be a little bit more aggressive in these type of events where less than half the field is going to be cut. So I got three guys over $8,700. So my third guy is going to be Francisco Molinari, who has really, really good course history here. He's won this event a couple of years ago with that 64 on Sunday to come back. Again, he was one of those things like I was talking about with live betting. He was 40-50-1 going into Sunday. This week, you can look on Saturday because of that wind, and you're going to be able to find some numbers on some guys that I think, you know, can move up the board. But I do like Francisco. The guy's been playing good golf. I think he said like three top tens in his last four events. Bermuda is his best putting surface. His iron game has looked fairly strong since the beginning of the fall. You know, 1.9 strokes gained in Houston, 2.9 at the Amex, 4.1 at Farmers, 1.6 at Genesis. So I like three top tens in his last four events. Good course history. So Francisco is my third cash game cornerstone this week. Other guys, I'll go back to Willie Z. Again, elite iron play, good from long with his long irons, good on long par threes. That's sort of something that I'm looking for again this week. Now, English, like I talked about, he sort of fits what I'm looking for with his long iron play and his par three play on long par threes, really good on par fives. But his game has been so shitty. If I can get him at like 5% ownership, he could be a nice leverage play in GPPs. Leishman, another guy. Really strong course history. The stats don't really tell, look that great for him. But he's been playing decent here lately. Not great, but decent. Once again, Bermuda by far his best putting surface. Prior to last week, his iron game looked really, really good, gaining about close to 15 strokes on the field with his irons from the Sony all the way to Genesis. Is about four events. So I like Leishman. I think I might even think about using him in cash. We'll have to see. Just depends how everything breaks down. Kokrak, another guy who I like this AK range. Kokrak, another guy who I like, really good on those par fours that I was talking about. Good long iron player, which will help once again. And then, you know, so I like Kokrak. We'll see. A lot of his damage has been with the putter. We'll see where his ownership goes as well. If he tends to be extremely high owned, it might be worth a fade. But as of now, I do like him. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you just called it. I think he's going to be a really good potential fade. He's been playing incredible. It's not because they just if the ownership goes there, there's just too many other guys in this range that we're going to talk to. And then even just below in the high sevens. But for me in the AK range, I'm going to stick with Billy Ho. I like, you know, he can get hot at times and get streaky. And this is the sort of the Florida swing. This is what he does. So, you know, yeah. Always like him on all of these courses. And at 8,900, I think he could go a little overlooked. I don't know if people double down on Louis and his price is up there at 8,800. But like I said, especially if we get, I hinted at earlier exactly what I said. If we get the weekend weather, I think he's playing good enough golf, makes very few mistakes, has the full complete package of the game to get to the weekend. And then that could be just sort of a good spot for a guy like him. It's almost like a cheaper Matthew Fitzpatrick in a sense, right? And when he gets on, like, man, he missed a close eagle on Sunday. He missed a close birdie on Sunday. He could have been even better on that scoreboard than he was. So I definitely like him. I like Willie Z, who you mentioned just been too hot with his entire game, ball striking approach, all of that. Sam Burns really popping from a stats perspective. I think if you look at all the stats we were talking about earlier and just everything that we dropped in there, he's played here three times and made the cut all three times. So no standout finishes, but it was just a couple weeks ago when he was doing his thing, even after a stumble in round three in weather, he came out strong in round four and then just faded on the back nine and ended up giving that thing away. So either way, he's playing some good golf and at 8,400. I think the price is fair. And then down at the bottom, the one you mentioned there, Leishman, people might, you know, I think they might go away from him to go to Kokrak, and the stats will say Kokrak for sure and everything he's been doing recently. But if you look at just the course history and whatnot too, that goes with Leishman, sometimes, you know, people come back to these courses and can find their way around it and get a little bit more comfortable with it. A guy like Molinari, who you mentioned earlier, I would say the same for Leishman down here at 8,200. So I wouldn't hate that. If nobody wants to play Kokrak and he's coming in at like 5-6%, then he's a great play. I have bad memories of Kokrak chalk at like 20%. And so that would lean me away, because in the 7K range, there's a lot of guys here too, Kenny.
Yeah, there is. I mean, Cameron Davis, first off, he's actually first in my model in the last 50 rounds. I mean, first in birdies, a better gain, second in DraftKings points, third in par fives, 10th in par fours, 7th in proximity from 200 plus, 13th in par three, strokes gained par three in 200 to 225 yards. Everything lines up. I think I got to play him. And it's not like he's been playing poorly. The guy's had some nice little upward swings here in the last, you know, 3 or 4 months. I think I'm going to play Ricky. The thing about Fowler is the one thing he's really been missing his putter. Now, the last time he played, and that's really been hurting his game. Last time his putter was amazing, which is what we usually expect from Ricky Fowler. Again, but his iron play wasn't that great. Maybe he can find that blend this week coming back to Florida. And I don't think he's going to be that popular. You can probably single digit owned. You could probably get him. I'm also going to go back on Justin Rose, who did not play well last week, but is, you know, a couple weeks ago, he came second in Saudi in a pretty loaded field. So, you know, he's had success here in the past. I think another leverage play, GPP play, low on possible, that you can get on with immense upside, because it's Justin Rose. He was number one in the world just a couple of years ago. Anybody else in this range, in this top range?
I love Cam Davis, who you mentioned. The Fowler thing's interesting. I was actually chatting with Sundog Monkey Martin, who was on our Players podcast last year, right before everything got shut down. So we're thinking about getting him back for the Players to get a redo in place. And that's sort of what we were talking about, because a couple of we lined up on a couple things, and then, you know, he was in on Fowler. And I said, maybe he sold me, and now you're talking about it too. So I'm leaning that way as well, Kenny. I just think it's a good place for him. I think he still needs to get something happening here, right? He's outside the top 50. Everything that he needs, you know, course history's decent.
He's got that Masters motivation, right? I mean, right now he wouldn't be in the Masters field, correct? I don't know if he's going to be in the match play. He's probably right on the edge for the match play. So he needs a good event here to get in that field as well. And he probably wants to play as much as he can in the next 3 weeks so he can make the Masters.
Yeah, I feel like he can do it. Like, he can do something here. So I definitely we'll talk more about him, but I got him in the pool now. So I like that. Cameron Tringali, this guy just doesn't stop. And this might be finally a spot where we don't see him as owned, because there is, you know, the Cam Davis, the Kokraks, all these other plays around it, you know, Lanto, different guys. So I definitely still in on Tringali. I think just, again, complete game lately, at least, has been on. So, you know, I'll stick with that. And then really from there, Kenny, it goes down. We normally like Siwoo Kim on Pete Dye tracks, but I'm not sure what your thoughts are on him here. He still lines up from a, you know, stats perspective. Then you go down to other guys, you know, Corey Connors, Henrik Norlander, Luke List. These are just some of the guys popping for me. Benny Ahn, if we can hop back on that. Your boy Keegan Bradley. Henrik Stenson maybe gets comfortable. He's got an incredible course history here as well, but hasn't done much lately. So what are your thoughts on this lower 7K tier?
I like a lot of people here. So I think you can go, you know, a couple of 9K guys or Rory 9K guys and three guys from this range. You know, I like Noren. You know, he's a former winner here. Like you said, guys who've won here tend to play well here often and repeatedly. Corey Connors, another guy I do like with the good iron play, a birdie maker. I think it's a guy that would be really good to make the cut the first couple of days when the scoring conditions are ripe. Now, we'll see how it goes if the wind does pick up on the weekend and how he can go. But, I mean, first couple of days, I think he can make, I think he can make some noise, probably maybe first-round leader type deal, depending on when he tees off. So I like Connors. I like Brendan Todd. Accuracy off the tee, but still really good on par fives, even though he's short. You know, seventh in strokes gained par five in the last 50 rounds in this field. Had a pretty decent showing last week. I do like Luke List once again. You guys had some good finishes here. Iron play strong, par five strong, really good with his long irons. Another guy I do like in this range. I'll probably go back to Maverick McNealy. Just playing good golf. Again, the stats won't line up for it. He's more of a West Coast guy, so a little bit of worry there. We'll see if he ends up making my final, you know, my final card for my DFS lineups. But coming off a second place finish, you can't really take that against him. And then you got Keegan, again, iron play from 150 to 175, 200 plus, really, really strong. Again, so, you know, I'll probably go back to him as well. Let's move to the 6K range. Tam, why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, a few guys stand out to me off the top. So Matthew Neesmith, we've been on him a little bit, riding him. We didn't talk about Wyndham Clark, I guess, right at the very bottom. He was sort of the other guy that lined up. I've seen a few people talking about him. I don't know if he'll get, you know, too popular, but I think Wyndham Clark at 7K straight lined up nice. But Neesmith, for sure, you know, just approach, scoring, tee to green overall, hitting greens, all that stuff lines up. EVR did his thing last week, a special Sunday out there. I thought that, you know, lined up well. Varner has burned us a few times, can go back to him. I really like Munoz, though. He's another guy. Just, he's funny because he's out there sort of like Hovland and Scheffler, like no matter what's going right or wrong, always smiling, seems to be having a good time. And the stats line up across the board. He's only played here last year and was a miscut, but everything I saw last week keeps me dialed into him for this week. He was really strong on Sunday with his approach game. Overall, tee to green, everything was there. So I think he lines up for me. You know, Doug Gim, John Huh, those guys come back into play here. Kyle Stanley stands out. Doc Redman, Sepp Straka. These are some of the guys at the bottom. And then any type of course with approach, you know, hitting fairways and approach, things like that. Fairways not as important, but just approach in general. Brian Stewart at 6,200. That's sort of the guys for me, Kenny.
Yeah, my last cash game cornerstone is actually going to be Mr. Kyle Stanley at $6,500. Again, over his career, iron play has been his forte. He's very, very strong with his irons. He didn't really show it the last time he was out, but prior to that, prior to the Genesis and the four events that he's played, you know, prior to the Genesis, he's gained something like 15 strokes with his iron play in four events. He's made five straight cuts in a row with a top 20. He has like three top 20s here in his career. I think you can go a little bit riskier. Like I said, only 123 golfers. You're looking at like 50 golfers, probably going to be 50 to 55 golfers going to be cut instead of the usual, you know, 90 in a regular field event. So you could be a little bit more aggressive. So I'm going with Kyle Stanley as my final cash game cornerstone. So that's my cash game cornerstones this week are going to be Tyrrell Hatton, $10,000. Matthew Fitzpatrick, $9,800. Francisco Molinari, $8,700. And Kyle Stanley, $6,500. This still leaves you $15,000. To make the rest of your roster. So still plenty of money. You can even go back up to the 8K range if you'd like. So plenty of options when it comes down to it. Other guys that I do like in this range, I do like Neesmith. Cameron Percy showed a little bit last week in Puerto Rico. One thing we missed about Puerto Rico, Brandon Grace. What a performance after losing his father from COVID about a month ago, and to come out and get his second win on tour, his first win in the last 5 years. One thing you got to remember about Brandon Grace, it was a few years ago when he was basically in the lead going into the last couple of holes of the U.S. Open. before he hit, you know, the dreaded out of bounds on 18, which cost him. So it's not like this guy's coming out of nowhere. The guy is an elite level player, and we'll have to keep an eye out for him for the rest of the season, especially now that he has his card and we're going to see him every week. So shout out to him. I mean, what a way to win, honoring his dad. Other guys I do like in this range, Seaweed Doug is another guy that I'll go ahead and play. I did say Percy. Who else did I have? Doc might be somebody to go with in this range. So there's plenty of options down here. Anybody else we missed?
No, I was just thinking about Grace. So you're talking about him there. And also, don't forget about 17 at the Waste Management when he let Ricky get away with murder with a 74 on Sunday to win the thing, because yep. Grace went in the water down the stretch on the drivable par four. So he could have had that one too, but yeah, awesome story. Great to see. I think he's going to take this week off. I didn't see it official yet or anything like that.
But yeah, he said he was going to, but as of now, I think he's still in the field.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely an awesome story. And then the rest of the guys you mentioned, I'm pretty much with you there. I guess Percy was one that stood out that you just mentioned that I didn't even look at. So I see him there.
Killer Keith on Bermuda. You can take a peek at him.
Yeah. He's got some history too. I think if you look back, fifth and sixth, the last couple of years, I'm not sure. I didn't look too hard at him because I think it's just been brutal lately, but it goes with the, you know, what I was saying there earlier, where if you go get back on a course where you're comfortable, have done well in the past, you get your mindset right, then yeah, nothing since the Sony for him has been really poor with pretty much every part of his game, but definitely could be a great little tournament play and something to spark him back up. And one I didn't mention was Russell Knox. Another guy has been playing decent golf recently and more so just about if he does get you through. You know, at Pebble, he was good. At, you know, Waste Management wasn't terrible. The Amex, he was okay. Like, a couple spots recently that he's shown up just a little bit.
And yeah, his iron play is always legit. I can get behind Russell Knox.
If he gets into that weekend and we get some rough weather, I think that's another guy that can definitely just grind it out for you. So I think that would be a nice little tournament play. But other than that, man, not much else for me.
All right, that sounds good. Let's get to our bets for this week. I will go ahead and start. First off, we're going to start off with Matthew Fitzpatrick at 25-1, Francesco Molinari at 35-1, Leishman at 55-1, Rose at 70-1, and Connors at 140-1. I'm going to leave a spot or two open for that Saturday morning, like I was talking about as well. So I got five this week.
All right. And what about the secret bet?
I don't know the secret bet. Hold on. I did bet somebody that I didn't say. Hold on. I'll look who it was.
You got him to give out the secret bet this week. Here we go.
Secret bet this week. Hold on. Nope. It wasn't there. Maybe it's in this other one. Hold on. Go ahead with your bets.
Now look, bring it back for the people. Yeah. I told you at the top. Yeah. Rory 10-1 to me just stood out because I bet him last week in a way stronger field. And so I actually thought he would have been, you know, higher odds than this, but 10-1, I'll take Fleetwood 40-1. Talked about it, just more of a, you know, potential Morikawa situation where he just bounces back from. I like your Rose one maybe for that better. I was thinking about adding him, I didn't yet. I took Ricky at 70 with a T8 each way, Cam Davis 75-1 with the T8 each way, and then Munoz was my 140-1 with the T8 each way there. So I got five in so far. I'm thinking about that Rose one and pulling the trigger, but maybe I'll bet the secret bet instead.
There actually wasn't a secret bet. Those are the five bets that I've made so far. So no secret bet this week. Those are the first ones. I think the first one I hit was Rose at 70-1 and Connors at 140-1. Those are the first two that I hit. And the other three, I just looked through a little bit more research and got those done. So no secret bet this week.
So far.
All right. So far. I'm sure there will be. One and done. I'm going either probably Hatton. Rory or Hatton, Rory, Fitz, or Molly.
I'm going to go Hovland, Hatton, or somebody else. I don't know, but those two are definitely at the top of my list.
All right, that sounds good. Anything else for you this week?
No, I think that's it, man. It should be a lot of fun. I think this is a good one we got coming up here. You know, this whole stretch I love. I'm just sour because we're not going to be at the Honda this year like I wanted to be in the DFS Open and everything down there. So
we'd be there next week. In 1 week, we'd be down there. So that really does suck because I would love to go back to Cheetah and meet some of those girls once again. But anyways, all right, you know, you can find me on Twitter at KenNoVT. You can find my weekly articles on GupsCorner.com. They're doing a lot of cool stuff. The site just got upgraded. It looks freaking sweet. So, you know, make sure you check that out. Check my Twitter feed for some promo codes. We're doing the best promo codes that we can right leading up to the Masters. So make sure you check out my Twitter feed and GupsCorner.com. Tambo.
Yeah, find me on Twitter at Toe Tag and Tambo. Hit me up there if you guys have any questions. RotoGrinders Discord, same name. I talked about it already earlier, but head on over to rotogrinders.com/dgen. Get yourself $10 off the first month. Got the Tuesday show tomorrow with Cards and Noto. Wednesday night's going to be a guest show with the Lineup HQ breaking down this stuff. We'll see. Maybe I'll come around on Kenny's Rory takes, and maybe Hovland is 30%. I'll have to adjust everything that I'm doing. Obviously, it's a first look, but I'm excited for this week, man. It's going to be a good one, so take us out of here.
Yeah, it should be a fun event. There's still, it feels not great, but it's not horrible. Still got some guys up there. And if anyone else calls me the Tony Finau of golf betting, I'm going to slap him in the mouth. Let's win some motherfucking money. DGen Nation.